Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck, or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge, upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hey, welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the president and CEO of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU School of Law, Michael Waldman, and we're going to spend the entire show on the threat to voting this November. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. Now, we'll get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. So tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Trust and Will, 3-Day Blinds, Delete Me, and Miracle Made in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting our sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. Hey, James, we face what I think will be the most intense voter suppression since the Jim Crow days of decades ago. It's also the most significant midterm election in the last 50 years. We're going to vote the entire program to some of the issues and concerns, and we have the perfect guest, Michael Waldman, president of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, champion of democracy and voting rights. Michael, an alum of the Clinton White House, has authored books on constitutional matters, authored several books on voting, including The Fight to Vote, A Story of the Struggle for Voting Rights. Michael, we're going to get to some specifics right away. But first, with every indication that the Democrats will win probably big in November, and President Trump obsessed with stopping that, how great is the danger?
You know, Al, we have had tremendous pressures on our elections in recent years. When you think about the pandemic, when you think about the violence, the threats of violence, disinformation, but the system really held, and we had free and fair and secure elections. People knew what to do. The difference right now, for the first time, I would say for the first time in our country's history, is the federal government itself and the president are trying to undermine our elections. So that's the new risk. I think that we can have strong elections, but it's going to take a fight to vote, to protect the right to vote between here and November.
Republicans right now, just to talk about what they're doing currently, their top priority, they say, is the so-called SAVE Act, which Trump and Mike Johnson say simply requires voter ID, which most Americans support and is widely used. Why does that concern you? You know, we had a listener, I think it was from Raleigh, North Carolina, who said, look, I know it's bad, but it's hard to explain to people why it's bad.
Well, this voter ID argument is a grand bait and switch because states all have voter ID. Almost all the states do. That's not new, and that's not what's really dangerous, particularly dangerous in this bill. What this bill does is say to register to vote in the United States, and in some versions even to vote, but to register to vote, you have to produce a passport or a birth certificate. And our research at the Brennan Center shows 21 million people right off the bat don't have ready access to those documents. You know, half of all Americans don't have a passport, and, you know, they might have a birth certificate, but, you know, they don't really know where it is. Oh, it's in my mother's closet somewhere. And that doesn't even count, for example, married women whose name might be different on their birth certificate than on the voter rolls. So this is not voter ID. This is a egregious voter restriction, show your papers proposal that would emphatically actually stop millions of people from voting. So they're calling it voter ID because everyone, you know, people don't have a problem with that. But that's been dealt with. This is a new thing that would emphatically require people to produce documents that they don't in many instances, just don't have.
And they are probably disproportionately poorer people, people of color, people who Republicans would just as soon don't vote.
How do you summer in France if you don't have a passport?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. There are other provisions, at least in some of the forms of the SAVE Act. One is to make mail-in voting more difficult. I mean, what's the problem? A number of states have only mail-in ballots, like Utah, which I've never considered a bastion of left-wing politics. What are they after there, and what would the dangers be?
So again, this is all in service of this urban myth that there are a lot of non-citizens voting, which is just not true. There are a lot of states where all voters get sent a ballot if they want to vote by mail. And then, of course, mail voting has proven to be very popular in recent years, especially since the pandemic. It's sort of consumer choice, that as well as early voting. It's all just part of this conspiracy theory that Trump has been pushing since he lost the 2020 election and even before then, that somehow there's massive fraud and that it's all being done through mail-in voting. But everybody's experience in our country is very different. It's these elections have been secure. Nobody said that the 2024 election, which he won, actually, suddenly that one was okay. it's just a conspiracy theory being and a power grab being put into action.
Yeah, I mean, look, as for undocumented workers, I mean, they're scared shitless to go sometimes to the store, much less to go vote or send a ballot in by voting. That's
if you're undocumented, the last thing you want to do is walk into a government office, polling place and say, "Hi, here I am."
Here I am.
Commit a crime, by the way, in voting. And that's why, so, you know, in Louisiana, which, as James, may recall, the Secretary of State there, who's a Republican, said, "Oh, I'm going to look into this to see if there's all this fraud that we all say there is." And they did a big study, and this was released a few months ago. And I may be getting the numbers wrong, but I think she found some with all these MAGA people lined up on either side, at the press conference. They sort of sheepishly said, "Oh, we found 48 people who we think were non-citizens voting over the last 40 years." And so what do you know? It turns out it's not really a problem here in Louisiana.
Well, Michael, I'm going to turn it over to James right after this, but take it further. That's not the only place. There have been scores of voting fraud studies, nationally and by state. And just tell us what they say.
I mean, you are more likely to be struck by lightning than to commit voter fraud in the United States. That's what the studies all show. And again, it's not that there have been study after study after study. As you know, dozens of courts rejected Trump's nonsense when he tried to overturn the election in 2020. But what is at least delicious about these is these are Republican officials who are sheepishly admitting, actually there is not a problem. And the same thing was done recently in Utah. And if they're honest, I think you'll find the same thing state after state. It's a phantom menace in service of an attempt to grab power. And that's, I always come back to that. It's about holding on to power. And this is just kind of one of the methods.
James.
So Michael, here we are February and, people start voting pretty early. What are some ways that you anticipate that they're going to try to fool with this election? What is he looking at? It is things that people telling them that they can do.
See it already. We sort of see the outlines of it in a bunch of different ways. I mean, first of all, there's he issued an executive order, and he's trying to use this expanded notion of presidential power in a variety of ways to try to take personal control of the election system. He said the states are just, quote, agents of the federal government when it comes to elections. And they, at one point, he actually said they were agents of him. He did an executive order, for example, last March that required people to produce just a passport, not even a birth certificate, among many other things. We went to court at the Brennan Center with others and got that blocked. But we'll see him trying to abuse and use the power of the presidency. And this is something where the courts in particular have actually stood up and need to stand up. They're also threatening election officials in a bunch of different ways. Now, you know, we all saw the FBI raid on the Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia election office a few weeks ago. And it was outrageous and smelled from the beginning. And we just learned yesterday what was the affidavit that persuaded a magistrate judge to give the FBI the warrant to go seize all the ballots. And it was just a stapled together collection of conspiracy theories, discredited conspiracy theories, debunked conspiracy theories from 2020, sort of Mike Lindell territory nuttiness. And that was what they used to get the search warrant. But I think it was not only about this obsessive desire to relitigate the Georgia results. Because remember, Trump would have lost the election even if he'd lost Georgia, which, you know, that's been recounted and recounted already. I think it's trying to intimidate the election officials and all the rest of the country. The idea that, well, if you run an election free and fair, but I don't like the result, we might come after you. And so that's a big threat. We're working with those election officials, with law enforcement, with their lawyers. We're training lawyers all over the country about how to say no to illicit requests and that sort of thing. So taking after the election officials is another worry. And then the other thing, there's two other things. One we know is happening. One is more of a threat. If you think about, like, in 2020, the big debate was over vote by mail, which Trump said, you know, was illicit in some respect. In 2024, there was a worry that they were going to try to stop the certification of results by county officials all over the country. It didn't happen because Trump actually won, but that was the worry. This time, it's all about data. You've got the Justice Department demanding that all the states, or almost all the states as far as we know, turn over sensitive voter files, not just the stuff that's publicly available that any campaign can get access to, but social security numbers and all kinds of other things like that. And they're going to use this to create, to say, aha, look at our proof. We finally found all the proof that there's illicit people who shouldn't be voting. They're using it to pressure states to kick eligible voters off the voter rolls, and they're going to use it to try to cast doubt on the election, make people not really sure who won. So that is one big thing we're all fighting them on over the coming months. A number of courts have actually already ruled that they don't have the power to do this. That's one thing, is the data. And then the other thing, which you heard Steve Bannon say, he said, oh, we're going to surround the polls with ICE, is the use of the military, the use of immigration forces, or the National Guard or whatever, to intimidate people, to intimidate voters. And that has not happened yet. And everyone needs to remember, we did have elections in November in New Jersey, Virginia, New York City, California, other places, Georgia, and none of this happened, you know? So a lot of this can just be a lot of hot air. But we know how politicized ICE is. We know how politicized the Border Patrol is. And that's a real risk. And the key thing there is it is very illegal to use those forces to intimidate voters or mess with the elections under many federal laws and state laws. And that's something where people are going to just have to step up. So that's the other worry that we all have, because they keep saying it out loud.
So Michael, Trump says, and I'm quoting him, he wants to, quote, nationalize, unquote, the election. Is there any guidance in the Constitution that tells us who should be running elections, or should there be national events? I'm a terrible law student, but somebody just said there were 50 separate events. So what's the constitutional deal? Because everybody's supposed to worship the Constitution.
So on this one, I do worship the Constitution. There emphatically is guidance in there. And the reason you don't remember it from law school is you never learned it in law school because it was so uncontroversial. It was one of the things we all skipped over, you know? Yeah. So it's called the Elections Clause. And it's very clear. It's really interesting. I've written a lot about it. It's very clear. States run elections. Congress actually does have a role. It can pass national laws to override the states. And, you know, we think they should pass strong voting protection laws. They shouldn't pass bad laws like the SAVE Act, but Congress has a role. States run elections. Presidents have no role, period. They're none at all. And this has been said over and over again by the courts, by the Constitution. And the thing that's really fascinating to me is, I don't know if you've ever had the chance to read James Madison's notes from the Constitutional Convention, which I never read in law school. I never took an American history class in college. I've only done it afterwards. They're fascinating because we all think that, like, there was a lot of this stuff that, oh, you know, they might not have really understood what they were doing, or maybe these were like vague notions off in the future. They were really explicit about all this stuff. So Madison wrote that provision. He insisted that it be in the Constitution. And the reason was he wanted to stop what we would now call, they didn't call it that then, what we would now call voter suppression and gerrymandering. I mean, they didn't call it gerrymandering because Elbridge Gerry was right there.
Yeah, Elbridge was right next to him.
Yeah, and they haven't then invented the word, but that was what they were talking about. And the delegates from South Carolina, which was a very gerrymandered state to benefit the slave-owning parts of the state with the big plantations and more representation, they wanted that provision taken out. And Madison quotes himself as saying, oh, we have to have this in here because you have no idea what abuses the state legislatures are going to come up with. He said they might change the voting rules. They might make it hard for people to vote. I mean, just lists a bunch of things that are the very things that Trump and everybody are trying to do right now. And they kept it in. And so, you know, it's this federalist kind of clockwork system. States run elections. Congress does have a role and should play that role. They can ban, for example, the reason we have single member congressional districts was a law passed by Congress in 1840. It was a party line vote on behalf of the Whigs. It used to be a lot of multi-member districts before that. Election day is the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November because of a federal law passed by Congress. Congress right now can pass a law to ban partisan gerrymandering by both parties in all states. And then nobody would be disadvantaged. But presidents have no role. And the Justice Department has a very limited role, only implementing the laws passed by Congress.
So Michael, I get this question a lot. It's James, I'm just a citizen. I'm just worried sick about they're going to try to do something to mug it with this election, and they're going to try to put it off. So, I mean, is there anything that I can do? So what would you say, just John Q. involved citizen, is there some organization, is there something they can do? I don't know, help us out here.
You know, I think as we get closer to election day, there's going to be a lot of opportunities. I hope there are going to be a lot of opportunities for sort of civic engagement on behalf of the elections themselves. If you think about it, in 2020, when COVID hit and there were, you know, all these health risks. And so all the poll workers weren't able to show up that year because a lot of them were elderly. The business community, for example, that year mobilized 600,000 people to be poll workers. That's just one example. There may be things like that, but the most important thing people can do is vote. I would say people who are anxious should vote early, or vote by mail. I think that the sight of people voting without incident early can help give people courage. What we all worry about, of course, is, I mean, we all know that immigrant communities, people are scared to death right now. People aren't going out. Retail stores are really hurting. We need to find a way to give support to those communities. And that's something, by the way, the state and local governments can and should do. They have a role to protect the polls. We at the Brennan Center, we helped create and run something called the Committee for Safe and Secure Elections. We do it with a group called R Street, which is a conservative group, and others. And It's half law enforcement and half election officials, because they really need the help from police and sheriffs and prosecutors. And so in all 50 states last year, in 2024, on election day, beat cops were carrying pocket guides tailored to each state. There were 100,000 of them printed of how to protect the polls, how to protect voting rights. And, and it was without incident. I think that we need to kind of recommit to our democracy in that way. That's not a partisan thing by any means. But I think it could be a very helpful thing.
So, Alvin, I'll go back to you.
Michael, your conversation with James about voter suppression. Tell us about a guy named Kurt Olson, who appears to be the new Sidney Powell Rudy Giuliani.
He's the Mike Lindell of this.
Or maybe, Sidney Powell and drag or whatever.
So these are the, when they did this, and you tell me if I'm getting this wrong, because I can't keep, I don't have the scorecard of all the election denier, eccentrics out there. But again, when they did this outrageous raid on the election offices, it was all done with a warrant, and the warrant came from a magistrate judge who had gotten some kind of affidavit, one affidavit from the FBI saying, oh, we need to do this search and seize all this stuff. And so the question was, what's in that? I thought it was going to be, some people said, oh, they're going to claim Venezuela hacked the election or, these other things. What it was basically a greatest hits of conspiracy theories going back to 2021 after another, which have been debunked by courts, debunked by the media and others. And a lot of them come from this guy who's been peddling this stuff, who now has a role in, I believe, the White House.
He does.
As the conspiracist in chief on these election issues. And, in the law, there's something called the presumption of regularity. This is when I fake being a real lawyer. But it's something where courts assume that the government is telling them the truth on stuff. And you can have all kinds of reasons for thinking that's not always such a valid assumption. But it's hard to have the system work without some version of that. And you're now seeing courts all over the country say, well, ICE, we don't have the presumption of regularity with ICE. They're lying nonstop. We don't have it in all these other things. And I think that one of the consequences of this should be that judges should not take on face value some of these claims by prosecutors and by the FBI around elections, because it's just nuttiness. It's unsupported. It's been debunked. It was really encouraging what happened yesterday. I mean, it was horrifying what happened yesterday with those six members of Congress.
But that's about the fourth or fifth time that a grand jury has refused a prosecutor's request, which I am told by other lawyers and prosecutors is exceedingly rare.
Well, as you know, they say a grand jury will indict a ham sandwich.
Yeah.
But the idea that these...
Let me back up, Michael. These were the attempt to indict those six members of Congress, House, and Senate, who said basically the military code says that you shouldn't obey a illegal order. I mean, I'm oversimplifying that.
Senator Kelly, because he was retired, so they claimed some jurisdiction. But
I think they went after all six yesterday, didn't they, Michael?
Yeah. Blockin as well, who was an intelligence officer. All those senators and House members who did that video were all one in one way or another in the military or national security world. I should brag on one of them. Chris DeLuzio, who is a really impressive young member of Congress from Western Pennsylvania. He's in the Connor Lamb seat, if you know that area. He worked as a voting rights lawyer at the Brennan Center before he ran for Congress for several years.
Wow.
We know him very well, and he was in the Navy. And these are people who served the country, and all they said was what was in the military code. If the system were working as it ought to, there would be a bipartisan howl of outrage about this.
Right, to disbar some of those people who brought that or try to bring a proceeding. Let me get back to the voting, though. What in God's name was Tulsi Gabbard doing in Fulton County?
So
she's the director of national intelligence.
I think she had fear of missing out. She's on the outs with Trump, supposedly, as is in some ways Pam Bondi, as in Kristi Noem. So they all want a piece of the act of the voter suppression action. You know, it's not clear what she was doing there, but we have some hints. I mean, I don't know if you saw this. The Justice Department, Todd Blanche, the number two in the Justice Department, said, oh, I don't know why she was there. It wasn't us. I don't know why she was there. Maybe it was a coincidence. I don't know why she was there. Trump said, oh, I don't know why she was there. And she sent a letter to Congress saying, I was personally ordered by the president to go. And then he said, oh, what I meant to say is Pam Bondi ordered her. And so they're all, you know, finger pointing like in a Marx Brothers movie. But we have a clue from something else she did in Puerto Rico, where it turns out her office, which is a bit of a made-up office to start with, one more layer around the intelligence community, that they had gotten access to the voting machines in Puerto Rico. And one of the kookiest conspiracy theories, as you may remember from 2020, was that somehow Hugo Chavez had manipulated the election and gotten into the voting machines. And they were looking for evidence of that in Puerto Rico. And it's worth noting, he was dead for 7 years. He died in 2013. So he really had extraordinary powers if he was able to reach forward to manipulate the voting machines 7 years later. But that allegedly is part of what she was looking for in Puerto Rico, and maybe she was doing that down there too. One of the disturbing things, we've all talked about this over the years, there have been a lot of fights over these voting rules. A lot of times Republicans have pushed restrictions that I didn't think make sense. But a lot of times it was because political operatives, or they just thought they could, and they thought they would gain some partisan advantage or something like that. It wasn't like there was some mass mobilized movement pushing them to do this stuff. Unfortunately, that is not the case anymore. This has become a mobilizing and voting issue for people who want to restrict the vote. And I think it has to become and remain a mobilizing and voting issue for people who want to protect voting rights and expand democracy too.
Michael, let me ask one more question, then we'll take a very short break and come back with James. I'm almost embarrassed to ask this question, but you mentioned Venezuela. I have had people who I really don't think are crazy say, watch out. You can imagine the Trump people going to Maduro and say, I tell you what, baby, if you want to get out, there's one ticket, and that is just say that you interfered with the 2020 election.
Just ask Ghislaine Maxwell how it goes, you know?
Right.
Better prison conditions.
Should I be ashamed of myself for asking that question, Michael?
No. No, I mean, I think, Maduro's vice president who we have now, I guess, backed as the president of Venezuela, has an incentive to say whatever. I mean, if you think about it, remember the thing that got Trump impeached the first time was him going to a foreign leader at that point, someone none of us had ever heard of, Zelensky, and saying, we'll give you the military equipment that you've already ordered and that's due to you if you help me peddle dirt on a political opponent. So it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility.
Protect your family's future with trust and will. It would be grossly negligent not to do that. And it's inexpensive and it's easy and you can get it done and you can have peace of mind.
You know, when you have big plans and love your family, you know, it's really critical setting up your affairs with a trust and will, as James will attest. No one wants to talk about what happens when you're no longer around, but it happens. And trust and will online estate planning can help you get prepared when time is still on your side. Some people still haven't named a guardian for their kids, things that are way too important to put off. Thankfully, it's easier than you think. You can create an estate plan with trust and will in little as 30 minutes. Like all of us, you might have questions. That's why Trust and Will's online platform provides a step-by-step guided process and offers you optional one-on-one support from attorneys in your state so you can feel confident in your choices. They even have an amazing customer support from real people. We love that Trust and Will believes estate planning should be accessible to everyone. They are committed to making it affordable today and valuable tomorrow, no matter what your situation is. Plus, all of their products are attorney designed, state specific, and customized to your needs. We feel secure knowing that Trust and Will was created by legal experts and designed to grow with you, allowing you to easily update your plan at every life stage or transition. You know, we all know you want your family to be ready for any eventuality. And our young producer got his dad signed up as soon as he heard about it. He says it's not about the money, it's about being prepared. Time will tell, but I know that Trust and Will puts the future of what you've built in your hands. Add in bank-level encryption and secure sharing features that ensure your most important documents and details stay protected and accessible. And there's ultimate peace of mind. And don't wait until it's too late. Protect your loved ones today, tomorrow, and beyond with Trust and Will, the most trusted name in online estate planning. Go to trustandwill.com/warroom and get 20% off. That's trustandwill.com/warroom to get your 20% off. Once more, trustandwill.com/warroom. And the link is in our show notes. Okay, James Carville.
So, this is a thought I have, right by you and Franklin Brown Center. I think if you try to make it harder for people to vote, if properly, that can inspire people to vote. And somebody, we should put together a campaign. You can do it with foundation money. You don't have to, you can do it with soft money. Let my people vote. And as opposed to like, and I guess you got to file all the lawsuits, you got to do all of the other stuff you do, but to actually use voter suppression laws as a turnout generator.
You follow what I'm saying? I think it's a really important idea, and with a twist. But I think in the following way, it's always a worry for voting rights advocates and others. Do you risk disenfranchising people? Do you risk, if you warn about voter suppression too much, too close to the election, does it become almost accidental voter suppression in the sense of like people go, oh, well, if it's going to be that hard to vote, I'm just going to stay home. I've never really thought that, but that is a worry that people have. And we've all been, you know, in the past, we've been careful the closer we get to election day. It's interesting, even in the past, the Black community, more than any other community, has understood what's at stake, has understood what they had to do to fight to get the right to vote and how they're being targeted. And so you saw, even in recent years, it wasn't a demobilizing thing. It was a mobilizing thing in places like Georgia. This time, I think people see what's happening. They're so pissed off about it. And I think that, in fact, it can be a mobilizing issue. And again, it shouldn't be a partisan mobilizing issue. It should be that that people all across the political spectrum care about our democracy. And they do care about our democracy. There's every reason to think they do, just as we've seen this kind of broad revulsion against the way ICE is due. People want immigration enforcement. People have different views on immigration policy. But people are appalled by what's going on in Minnesota. This is a similar sort of thing. So, James, I think it's a great idea. And I think people need to, you know, we don't have a grassroots operation, but the people who do have grassroots operations, a lot of them are not as funded as they have been in other years. But this is the kind of thing that can build over time.
So Michael, what they have to do is, I don't know, progressive advocacy groups, they call themselves, but somebody, and maybe it's not the Brennan Center, maybe your legal operation, but somebody's got to give some thought for someone to take the lead on this, to raise the money, to disseminate stuff, because if it goes the way it normally runs, there'll be 15 useless people not contributing very much trying to do 15 different things. But,
you know, what I would say is I think my sense is that there's good coordination among groups. There's groups like All Voting is Local longstanding groups, whether it's Common Cause, League of Women Voters, NAACP, You have some of the, you know, the newer mobilization groups like Move On or other Indivisible, people like that. And you know, they can get pretty effective when they need to. A lot of people have been really focused in 2025 in a very robust way on sort of pushing back against the authoritarianism that we see in too many respects from the Trump administration. We need to make sure that, you know, as the election gets closer, that there's a strong focus on the election, and funders, and you mentioned foundations, you know, have been really, many of them have been really slow to this. This is again, it's not partisan, but if you care about any other issue, you got to make the democracy work.
So one of the things that you hear is, don't talk about how we're going to win, because if you do that, you're going to make Democrats just be complacent. You ought to say we're going down. I'm different. We're going to goddamn win, okay? And we're not just going to win. We're going to win big, because momentum is going our way. And I think when people sense that there's a winner, A, it makes them more excited. B, it makes the other side less excited. Now, there are people that just like you. I agree to say if, but there's an argument to say, don't tell people it's hard to vote because that's going to make them not want to vote.
You know, and I think people, one of the things about the No Kings rallies, you know, people can kind of laugh at them that they were kind of bland, you know, but people right. looked around and saw other people.
Just a million people.
Yeah. Well, and this is, so
in little communities all over America, not
100% patriotic. Yeah. And what was, and the numbers mattered. And I think, you know, the New York Times, it's easy to kick the Times. Something like one out of 10 journalists in the United States now works for the New York Times because everything else has collapsed so much.
Oh, my God.
But, so, you know, so, and they do great stuff. But the New York Times coverage of the No Kings rally, the most recent one, they said, oh, we're not going to estimate the crowd because that's such a hard science. And what matters more is what the people thought and feel and all that kind of stuff. And I just happened to be, because I was going out of the country, I was going to Prague for vacation. And I happened to look at the coverage of the Velvet Revolution in 1989 by the Times. And the coverage was the first day it said, 200,000 people gather in Prague to protest regime. Next day, 250,000 people gather. Next day, 500,000 people. The numbers mattered, just like we see in Iran today. Or the protests against Netanyahu's judicial moves in Israel before October 7th. When you get millions of people on the streets, it's a news story, and it ought to be treated as such by what's left of the news media.
So I'm going to give you real-time intimidation, both of you. You're both sitting down. I'm going to read you something that you in your entire life would have never thought someone would say. Headline, this is in The Hill, which is a very reputable publication. Gallup will no longer measure presidential approval after 88 years. Gallup will no longer track presidential approval rating after more than 8 decades of doing so, the public opinion poll that just confirmed to The Hill on Wednesday. Gallup has been intimidated into not recording presidential approval.
That's unbelievable.
Is
that real?
Yes. It's not the Onion.
I have the same reaction, Michael.
Look, right here.
It's not the Onion?
I mean, if it is, it's a goddamn good markup of it. It's a Hill story.
G-rated, what's the family rating of this podcast? just unbelievable.
It sure is.
We're just getting warmed up. All right? So one of the things Senator Ruben Gallego said on Cindy and Sean, the Court of History, the possibility of a general strike. All right, that's more of a French kind of thing than it is a U.S. thing. But I think if they do that, I think if somebody called for a general strike, you might get one. When I general strike, I mean no one does anything for a day. You don't go to work. You don't do anything. Nothing. You don't travel. And I'm not sure it's getting that serious. When you see Gallup capitulating,
that's just Stalin level.
Again, I might be onionized here, but I know somebody texted me that.
The thing that's interesting is there's a lot of knowledge about how these kinds of retreats from democracy happen and what can actually make a difference in terms of pushing back. And it's not, look, lawsuits sometimes matter, but it's not lawyers in courtrooms. It's people on the streets, it's people in polling places, and other things. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that people have said is when a certain percentage of the public is out protesting, that makes a big difference. Things like general strikes. You know, I think the challenge in the United States, of course, is that the percentage of the workforce that's unionized is so low that relative to what it used to be or other parts of the world too, that, you know, it might not have the same impact that a general strike would have had in, you know, Seattle in the 1930s or something. But I think we need to be ready to use all these means to push back. Because again, look, I'm encouraged by what we saw in Minneapolis, not of course by what ICE has been doing and not by the terror visited on the communities there and not by, of course, the killings of those two people. But the way there was sort of a spontaneous movement organized, you know, and we all talk about, this is pretty, I don't know if you have this experience. When you had the civil rights movement, for example, they knew that one of their big goals was to get on national television.
Yes.
That Selma, you know, what mattered was that Selma was filmed and put on television and broadcast to the country during the showing of Judgment at Nuremberg on ABC, and that would touch people's consciences. And I'll hear a lot of people say, a lot of people younger than me, we don't have a Walter Cronkite. You know, there's not one or three voices that tells people what's the news and how, and the news media has, of course, had such trouble and collapsed in so many ways. But the question is, you know, how are we going to get the word out without a Walter Cronkite to tell people what's happening? And one of the things we learned in Minneapolis is, this is Walter Cronkite. Each one of these things had 10 people filming it, videotaping it, broadcasting it, live streaming it. And somehow 80% of the public saw the video of the killing of Renee Good. They weren't watching the CBS Evening News, but they saw it. And so, you know, there are new ways of communicating that can grow out of this kind of stuff that can be very powerful.
So, man, I'm really encouraged by what y'all doing at the Brennan Center. I think the situation is actually, it's critical and it's immediate. My suggestion is to have an entire campaign, let my people vote.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they do it, go from that one bridge. It's all we ask, let our people vote. In the greatest bullshit of the 2024 cycle, when I saw a lot of commentators agree with it, well, the young men of color had no reason to vote. Oh, you didn't have a reason? Have you seen what's going on here lately? Maybe you do have a reason to vote, and a pretty goddamn good one.
You know, it's interesting. The Latino vote, as you know, which in the past was not a automatic Democratic vote. George W. Bush got 40% of the right. Latino vote, I think, when he ran for president, and he was majority when he was governor of Texas. And, you know, there was a swing toward Trump among especially Latino men and Asian men. And it was really striking in when you look at the elections in 2025, how much that swung back. In New Jersey and these other places. And a lot of these gerrymanders assumed, the Republican gerrymanders, assumed that the voting patterns in 2026 would be the same as in 2024. So, you know, that might not necessarily be.
So, I just want you to point this out to people. So, a data point, okay, it was a special Louisiana House district race. I happen to know the district well because I grew up in it. And Trump carried it by 13 or 14. The Democratic carried it by 22. And of course, like everybody else, has quants. And it was increased black turnout from the first round to the second round. The interesting thing is the Democrat carried the white vote. And not close. And I mean, I know that. And the whites in Iberville Parish are not the whites in Westchester County or Bethesda. Okay, that's not the main line.
I'm with the people in Greenwich. I'm with the people in Greenwich Village here. Be careful, you know.
And the main line is where I grew up. It's my people, James.
The whites that shifted were not college, were not suburban women. They were just white. Probably I know majority of whites without a college degree. I know it's a special election, but it's just one. Believe me, they know that happened. That hit them like a shitload of bricks.
That's really interesting.
And they see what's coming. They're going to be desperate, Michael. They're going to be desperate, and we got to be ready on every front.
Well, let's pick up on that, because I think you're absolutely right, James. Let's go to Election Day, Michael. Trump decides to send the Guard or ICE into East Cleveland or Detroit or Fulton County, or he invokes the Insurrection Act, gives him sweeping powers to send in the military, the exception to Posse Comitatus. What's to stop him, Mike?
So, you know, there's a few different things, but, you know, we're all looking at what could happen there and how to stop it. And I sure as hell hope that the Democrats in these negotiations they're having right now about the budget for DHS don't just say important things like, oh, don't wear a mask, but find ways to keep them the hell out of the electoral process. You mentioned the Insurrection Act. That is, Trump has abused emergency powers. He's declared all these emergencies.
Yes.
He's used wartime laws that have not been appropriately used. And we at the Brennan Center actually turn out to have pretty deep expertise in these emergency powers. But what's noteworthy is he has not invoked the Insurrection Act. And that gives presidents more power than these other laws do. Why hasn't he done so? I think it's because they have seen how the courts have not all done as much as we would want. But when they have ruled on this, they have said, as for example, they did in Chicago, you can't nationalize you can't federalize the National Guard. For this, there's no basis for it. Courts have been more willing to, usually courts give presidents a lot of leeway on this kind of stuff, but because it's so clearly nonsense, the basis for doing it, courts have started to step up and they've actually followed these laws. I mean, the liberals, progressives, one of the things I hear from everybody is, oh, what's the point of the law? Trump won't follow the law. Well, sometimes he does. He may not want to, but sometimes he does. And they pulled the troops out of Chicago and Portland when the courts ruled.
Michael, if he faces defeat on October 20th, he ain't going to worry about that. I think
he's not personally going to be going in with a gun. You know, I mean, you've got the military. That would be the use of the uniformed military, and states and local governments have power there too. And the other thing I would say is what they would get is for the first time, Supreme Court rulings and others limiting the power of the president to use the Insurrection Act. And he wants to use it, you know, for a lot of things. So you're certainly right. That is a real worry. But one of the answers to that is vote early.
Let me go through one or two other worries and we'll take a short break. The election workers. Remember the way in Fulton County they brutalized Ruby Freeman and Shai Moss, who eventually won a big settlement against Rudy Giuliani. But that intimidation is out there. We've gotten that from some of our listener questions. People are afraid. Can the polls be populated properly on Election Day, given those fears and the threats of intimidation?
You're exactly right. It's important. The elections on Election Day run with volunteers and local officials who are, you know, they're unsung heroes, as I say, and they're not national ideologues. I mean, some of them are Republicans, some of them are Democrats, but they've been running elections for years. A lot of them face threats. A lot of them are looking to retire. So some of the things that can help is law enforcement protecting them. Some of the things that can help is just public statements. This is something people can do, is to letting the election workers know that we've got their back. And I think it's also the kind of thing that We need people who care about democracy working to actually volunteer to be poll workers. You know, there's always been a worry that kind of election deniers will go be the poll workers and cause trouble. And that has not happened. And, you know, it's a lot of, I mean, you have to commit a day to doing it. So
yeah, it's hard.
It's too much work for people. But I think, again, this is to James's point of let my people vote, making it a civic cause to have a free and fair election, not a partisan cause, but a civic cause, it can be something that could have a big impact.
Get your right with 3-day blinds. Most people like me can't sleep with light in the same time, but it's hard to achieve real darkness. But with this, you can sleep in the darkest room you can imagine, and you'll get a better sleep than you ever imagined.
When you want to upgrade your home, wandering through endless aisles at the store and finding an attendant is exhausting, especially when glaring sunlight coming through your old busted blinds woke you up at dawn. If your blinds are stuck in the past, there's a better way to buy blinds, shutters, shades, and draperies. It's called 3-Day Blinds. They are the leading manufacturer of high-quality custom window treatment in the United States. And right now, if you use our URL, 3dayblinds.com/war room, they have a buy one, get one 50% off deal just for you. Well, we shop for almost everything at home, so shop for blinds there too. 3-Day Blinds, local, professionally trained design consultants, average 10 plus years of experience in providing expert guidance on the right blinds for you, all in the comfort of your home. Just set up an appointment and you'll get a free, no obligation quote the same day. We love that the expert team at 3-Day Blinds handles it all. Measuring and installing blinds can be a big challenge, so they design, measure, and install for you. That way, you can sit back, relax, and leave the heavy lifting to the pros. Once we heard about them, we knew it was time to upgrade. Their blinds come in thousands of options that fit any budget or style, so it's an easy sell on the family. With 3-Day Blinds, we're excited to be getting better sleep and opening and closing our motorized blinds from the comfort of our beds. Alexa, I slept great. Now let there be light. They are a real upgrade, not just a replacement. And we know you'll like your 3-Day Blinds as much as everyone we know does. Now, right now, get quality window treatments that fit your budget with 3-Day Blinds. Head to 3dayblinds.com/war room. For their buy one, get one 50% off deal on custom blinds, shades, shutters, and drapery. For a free, no charge, no obligation consultation, just head to 3dayblinds.com/war room. One last time, that's buy one, get one 50% off when you head to the number 3daybinds.com/war room. The link is in our show notes.
Do you have at the Brennan Center, is there like an early warning detection system that you have monitors or something? You can say, hey, look, in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, they're doing this right now. I mean, because what they'll probably do is try to do, you know, 100 different things at the same time. Do you know of any early warning system that's sitting there ready to warn
people? Generally speaking, it isn't us, but yes, there are, as Election Day approaches, there are various networks that come together. There's the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights, for example, which has run the election protection operation nationwide going back decades. As I said, there's a group called All Voting is Local. There's a national coalition that we're part of called ESRN, and don't ask me what the letters stand for, but it's the coalition of groups that works hand in glove in communities, in states, and links them up with lawyers, with state attorneys general, with law enforcement, and that kind of thing. It's very much in real time. I'm going to give you an example of the kinds of stuff that people are doing. This is something we did in recent elections, all the disinformation and lies. And, you know, this is going to, we're going to have deep fakes and AI is we're going to see all this stuff that we've never seen before, we assume, coming up. There are all these deliberate attempts to spread rumors. And what do you do about it? So what we've done in the past, as an example, is we monitor the rumors, and others do this, like really looking at the dark web and all these other places where this stuff is spreading around. Say, oh, there's lots of non-citizens voting. That's a one that comes up a lot. We check what the messages are. We get the messages out to the election officials in particular, who are not sophisticated often in terms of their communications. And then they're out there and able to give people reason to not worry about the polls being, you know, being overrun with illegal voters and that kind of thing. There's a pretty big operation that happens.
I'll tell you exactly what my worry is, and I'll turn it over to Alan and stuff, is I've been around Democratic politics for a long time in Democratic interest groups. And everybody wants to do their own thing. They have their own donors, they have their own space, they have their own thing. Somebody, somewhere, has got to be a unifying force in this. Right. I don't know who it is, and I know you get all that. You're not the boss of me. You're not telling me what to do. I got my own organization. I got my own thing. I think the threat to the country is sufficiently grave that we got to get a flag and rally around it. I don't know who the flag is. You say Brennan Center is not the ideal place. Y'all certainly can do it and contribute to it. But somebody...
I think we're not the political folks.
Yeah, I understand. But somebody has got to pick this baton up. They can't be an 81-year-old and an 83-year-old picking it up because we can't bend over to get the goddamn thing.
We don't know who he's talking about, but that's okay. You know, and let me pick up on that because it's not just the political. It's also the legal. I mean, I know you guys are going to do good work. Abby Lowell told me he's working with you. There are other groups. But they're going to have a unified approach to try to go after you. What Biden did in 2020, one of the good things he did was they had three lawyers who were at the top, and lots of lawyers who had, it was Seth Waxman and Don Verrilli and Walter Dellinger. This time, if there are 1,000 flowers blooming, not just in the political front, but on the legal front too, because the legal challenges are going to be far greater. I mean, you'll forget more about this than I know, Michael, but they'll be far greater than they were in 2020. And whether it's Hakeem Jeffries and Schumer or someone, there ought to be somebody who kind of is the top domo.
You know, and it's a challenge because when you have a presidential race, you can have centralized, you know, centralized strategic approach. And it's a lot harder, as we see with the DNC or any of these political operations. What I'll say again is on this, I think that in terms of the nonpartisan side, the 501c3 people or 501c4, to use the acronyms, you know, as opposed to the political parties, I think that the groups really exist and they work well together. I think that there is they need money is what they need. I think that there needs to be more investment by foundations, by wealthy donors, in these groups, because a lot of the folks know what to do, but they need to be able to go to scale. In terms of the kind of political side, I don't know. I mean, I think that if you look at the Democrats, they did fight a pretty tough-minded fight in the redistricting fights in a way that I think people didn't necessarily expect. So I do agree that 1,000 flowers blooming is not the best approach. But I also don't think it's what's happening. I think we've got a lot of good people ready to go, and they need funding to do it.
Yeah, you need 1,000 flowers working and good people working. But I still think, and look, this is not a presidential election, but they're going to be doing the same thing in Wisconsin that they're doing in Georgia and they're doing in Pennsylvania and then House seats everywhere. And I have a bias here because I think he's so good, but I think you need someone like a Seth Waxman who's been through those battles, not just vote counting ballots, but really has been through the whole national thing. Or it's again, very good people working, but there has to be some sense of direction. And I don't know. You again know more than I do about this.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing too, and this is a reason to be concerned. Is on a lot of these voting issues over the years, these big white shoe law firms have actually been pretty important in right. bringing these cases. And one of the consequences of Trump's, you know, these executive orders he did, illegal executive orders, which the courts have knocked down over and over and over again, has been that some of the big law firms that have been in the past really, really active on protecting voting rights are off the field. I mean, Paul Weiss was a very significant partner for the Brennan Center, for example.
Yuck. Yuck.
In protecting voting rights. And
they're not going to be there. They're not going to be there this time.
Well, they have to get permission from, you know, Stephen Miller to do
yeah.
it.
Yeah. So, but you know, you're right. Absolutely. It's awful what those big New York law firms do, but you got a lot. I mean, you know, you have Williams and Connolly, you have Wilmer Hale, you have Foley Hoa. I don't think you're going to have a shortage of lawyers, not to mention all the new groups that have been set up, including some by conservatives.
The Committee for the Rule of Law, the groups that
what's the guy's name? Peter Kaiserling, is that
Peter
right?
Peter Kaiserling,
a very tremendously
impressive,
yeah,
guy who was the acting Attorney General under George W. Bush,
Bush.
Of the Civil Division, one of the founders of the Federalist Society,
and clerk for Robert Bork. So he's not a lefty.
I will say that he is a new member of the board of the Brennan Center.
Wow.
Believe it or not.
Okay. I won't stay on this anymore, but I really think
but there needs to be so many people from across the political spectrum, from different parties and no party, who recognize the threat to the rule of law here and recognize the threat to democracy. And you're seeing alliances you never would have seen possible before. So, you know, that may not be enough, but it's encouraging.
It is encouraging. Two more, turn it, James, and then we'll go through some other stuff. If the vote's close, James thinks it's going to be a blowout, and I'm close to that. But let's just assume, for discussion purposes, the Democrats pick up 7 or 8 House seats, and it's 222 to 213. What can the Republicans, what can Mike Johnson and Donald Trump do to prevent some of those members from being seated?
Well, on the one hand, I want to just say it again and again. I can't say it too often. People say, oh, well, Trump, quote, canceled the election. No, he can't cancel the election.
Right.
Elections are run by states. They're actually run by counties, but they're run by states. And there's no way that any president could cancel all these congressional elections. How do members of Congress get seated? So we saw with this recent thing where there was a member who was elected, a Democrat, and because they didn't want to have a vote on the Epstein files, they just took their sweet time about seating the person. And that was not something where they even claimed to challenge the legitimacy of the election. Will the Republicans, say, oh, you know, well, there's too much doubt about these 15 seats. We're going to have to investigate for a while right. to see whether or not there was voter fraud and all this other stuff. And, you know, there have been examples over the decades of this, in one or another example, in the House of Representatives itself decides who gets seated in the House of Representatives. And, you know, so it is theoretically possible that they could do that. We would be in uncharted territory. I do think, maybe I'm wrong, but I do think that if the Democrats or the Republicans, if one party wins the election and the other party simply refuses to seat those people, it's a congressional January 6th, In very visible and plain sight, I do think, you know, there will be I think that there will be a mass response by the public, people on the streets, people responding. I don't think that that's likely to happen. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that it would be such an end to the legitimacy of any politician who tried to do that, that I don't think you're going to see the Republicans or the Democrats, should it come to that, do that.
Oh, I can't imagine any politician inciting a mob to go to try to overturn the election. I mean, perish that thought, Michael. We know that would never happen.
Trump would not have won 2 months later. He needed to be out in the wilderness for a little bit, and the response, you know, here's the fundamental thing that I point out over and over again about the country right now. The 2024 election was the first time since the 1800s that the incumbent party lost three times in a row. Different parties, right? Democrat, right. Republican, Democrat.
Right.
People are pissed. There's a deep unhappiness in the country. People feel left behind economically. They feel government is corrupt. They feel disconnected from the system. And it goes deeper than affordability or inflation or whatever specific thing that people, that was part of it, but it goes much deeper. Trump, in his way, intuited this in the part of the public. The Democrats, in their way, missed it three or four different ways. And Democrats need to show, and anybody who wants to speak to the public right now needs to be able to show they understand how deeply people want change. It's not a left-right thing. It's not even a partisan thing. But you know, my worry is that there's too many people in public life who are just kind of acting like, oh, you know, it's all normal. This is just all kind of the normal swing of the pendulum back and forth, blah, blah, blah. And I think that not only is Trump not normal, but the times we're living in are not normal. And that was all before AI and the incredible, you know, upheaval that's probably, maybe not, but probably going to have on the economy in the coming years.
Mike, what I think we should do is, I know y'all going to be cataloging this stuff, you know, since what's going on, I think we should have you back in the not so distant future, so you can give us a report on what's going on. What have they tried here? What are you seeing?
Very happy to do it.
Early warning system, if you will. And, you know, I'm sure that your people can start chronicling stuff, and, you know, that people can go to that page. And in Ohio, they tried to suppress the vote. And remember this, if they stop Gallup from asking presidential approval after 88 years, you know they're going to try to stop your ass from voting. Understand that. That's just what they pulled off, and that's how desperate they are. And I'm hoping this Gallup story is an onion story, but I don't think it is. I think they just intimidate these people.
Are they owned by private equity or something like that? I mean, it's like
I our friend Judd Luggum will get into this pronto. Judd, if you're listening, this is right up your alley, dude. Find out the multi connections that the Gallup organization has, who owns them, what business they do, how it is subject to this kind of thing. I mean, I don't know, but the Gallup poll is fucking older than me. I never remembered, not since I've been a toddler. Well,
and it's not like they're stopping It's not like they're stopping polling. You know, I mean, look, no, as you know, there's all kinds of
approval.
One quiz is one question. And you know, look, there's all kinds of problems with polling methodology these days. People don't answer the phone and all that. But that's not, they're not choosing to go out of business. They're choosing to go out of asking this question because, as soon as we're done talking, I'm going to quickly look and see because I.
See, this is like me going to the doctor says, you can do what you want, but you can't take my blood pressure. What's fucking too hard? Yeah, that's the blood pressure of the nation. For 88 years.
Well, it's, you know, when I think I've put on too much weight, my first solution is I don't get on the scale.
Ice cream.
You know, and it's the same idea.
No, it sure is. And I think, you know, people just ought to always remember 2020 was the most vetted election in the history of America. Recounts. Arizona brought in a right-wing group to do forensic recount of Maricopa County. Biden actually won more votes. 60 court cases, a number of Trump judges, but they still spin this total, complete lie. Michael, we're going to move to one or two other things, but just summarize. You've already talked a little bit about what people can do out there, obviously voting, but just summarize some other things to advise the listeners on how they can get involved right now, 9 months ahead of time.
You know, I think that we need to be finding ways to support the election officials. There are local groups that do that. I think that getting active, not around voting, but around, you know, the No Kings, the response to ICE, all the kind of stuff that people are doing otherwise, that will come to be very useful when it comes time to protect the vote. And I think you all have said it's really important that political candidates themselves take this seriously and understand that this is both a message. It's not only just sort of like, oh, you have your lawyers, you know, they challenge the petitions of your opponent or whatever, but this is actually a message that candidates need to be talking about, that standing up for democracy. And look, I think you are seeing that in lots of places and lots of ways. This is not something people don't care about. People care about this a lot. Corruption right now, which is defined very broadly, is constantly shows up as a major, major issue. There's this notion after Biden lost, oh, Biden talked about democracy and Biden lost. Therefore, oh, you know, I'm going to tell my clients not to talk about democracy. Well, democracy is a rather abstract word. But Biden lost for a lot of reasons, but not because he talked about democracy. Also, the way he talked about it, it sounded like he meant just vote for him. But people care about this stuff, and it's an emotional thing as well as just self-interest. I mean, it's a values issue as well as you know, I don't want my vote taken away. People get in their heart, in their deep core, they understand that they're not going to get health care, they're not going to get affordability, they're not going to get all that stuff if the system is rigged against them, and the political system they think is rigged against them. And this is part of all that. It's part of the answer, I would say, too, is that it's not enough to just oppose stuff. Democrats, Republicans, people need to be putting out really bold agendas for what to do next, so we're not just constantly playing defense and defending democracy.
Yeah.
Thank you. Protect yourself online with Delete Me. Well, I mean, you couldn't live in today's world and see the stuff that's happened and see the nefarious actors from not just governments around the world, but, any number of computer hackers. And, of course, what they do is they get your personal data. And trust me, this happens more than you want to believe. They blackmail you. And unless you've led a pristine life and you have done absolutely nothing that you don't want anybody else to find out about, you probably don't need this. But if you like the rest of humanity and you probably have things about yourself you'd like to keep to yourself, maybe this is a really good idea.
The only people I know who led a pristine life are you and me.
That's right.
And if you believe that. Anyway, moving on, Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. With so many threats out there, you need someone in your corner. And Delete Me does all the hard work of wiping you and your family's personal information from data broker websites. It's not just a passive service. Delete Me sends you regular, personalized privacy reports showing what info they found, where they found it, and what they removed. But they don't stop there. Delete Me isn't just a one-time service. It's always working for you by constantly monitoring and removing the personal information you don't want on the internet. As public figures, we always knew we could be targets for scammers and worse. But when we found out how many Americans are compromised and at the mercy of criminals, we wanted to fight back. With Delete Me, you'll feel so much better about your security. But more importantly, as family men, we know Delete Me is something that can help keep our loved ones safe. Join us and refuse to be a victim. Start taking steps to protect your privacy with Delete Me. The New York Times Wirecutter has named Delete Me their top pick for data removal services for a reason. So don't wait. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount for our listeners, get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/warroom and use the promo code warroom at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/warroom and enter the code warroom at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/warroom, code warroom. The link is in our show notes. Let's go, and we've talked about the national issues and everything. Let's just talk about just each of us have an outrage on a particular state and things that they already are doing. And I'll start with North Carolina, which has been central to my family's life. We love the state while deplore so much of what's going on. The Republican legislature and the election board down there are longtime vote suppressors. They are banning now, this time, some pre-election day Sunday voting. What that is Sunday voting is a big deal for the black community. It souls to the polls in a lot of places. That's why they are banning it. They are refusing to allow an early voting site at North Carolina A&T, an historically black college. They have an election board that's being staffed by nothing but political operatives and run. It's now run by the state auditor, who the Raleigh News and Observer says has diluted the integrity of the office of auditor. North Carolina, you're a lot better than that. James?
I guess what you just said, my rage, is this. Strategically, we have to turn this around. You know, so we do this, right? It's horrible. We're taking away souls to the polls. Everybody's run campaigns. There's Sunday before the election. It's the big time for black turnout, historically. They're going to not have them at colleges. I'd run a whole goddamn campaign in North Carolina, AT&T, and say, this is where you can vote. They don't want you to go there. Make them unhappy. You go do this. I think, and I believe this 100%, that yes, we got to fight this on front. We got to take to the courts. We might win, we might not win. We have to have a strategy that tells people that they're trying to stop you from doing this. It almost makes you like you're the outsider, all right? The system is that they're coming after you. They don't want you to do this. They want to stand back. They want all the tax cuts. They're bragging now. They've done away literally with every environmental regulation that has anything to do with global warming. Okay, maybe we don't run on that, but I think we should run on they're trying whenever they do this. Come in and say, they are trying to make you not vote. You show them they can't tell you what to do.
Michael, do you have any particular state that's been offensive already, or are there just too many?
There's a lot. And a lot of them have been stepped up. But I think if you look in places like Texas, one of the things that you see happen over and over again, and it's not just in Texas, is state governments are going after cities and counties that are either controlled by the other party or especially that are controlled by black and Latino officials. It's not just Trump saying, oh, you know, we want to nationalize the elections in these 15 places, which all happen to be, when Trump says, we had real problems in the elections in Milwaukee, Atlanta, Chicago, and Philadelphia. I don't think you need a translator to understand the racism behind what he's saying there.
Not a lie, but private equity firms in those
no systems. No polling there by Gallup either, you know.
Right.
I think in places like Texas, going after over and over again, places like Harris County, which is Houston, and trying to take over the government and take away their ability to do things, you see that in a lot of places, North Carolina and other states too, especially in the South, but not only in the South. That's what I think we need to be watching out for.
Enjoy your time in the sheets with Miracle Made. They come in contact with the sheets as much as anything you do in your life. And man, we preach this all the time. A good night's sleep is the most determinative factor in how you feel the next day. And these sheets go a long way toward a good night's sleep, I promise you.
You know, if you ever wake up sweaty, freezing, or just uncomfortable, just take it from James. It's time for an upgrade. The temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. That's why you need to switch to Miracle Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help you sleep perfectly all night long. Sleeping at the right temperature is a critical way to feel rested the next day. And whether it's too hot or too cold, Miracle Made sheets truly give you maximum comfort in any weather. They even make pillowcases and comforters too. Plus, thanks to their antibacterial silver technology. Miracle sheets require way less laundry because they stay clean and fresh three times longer. Not only is that fewer wash cycles, but it's great for your skin. Hidden bacteria can clog your pores and cause acne, so sleep cleaner and clearer with Miracle. Trust us, with no more gross odors, life's a whole lot better for your household. Now join us in getting better sleep every night. Not only are Miracle-made sheets smooth, breathable, and ridiculously comfortable, they don't have the steep price tag of other luxury brands. Miracle sheets feel nicer than bed sheets used by some five-star hotel. So it's a vacation every time you get into bed. I imagine myself, in the Napa Valley or Bermuda, but it's your call. Drift off to dreamland and wake up at the perfect temperature every time you get into bed. Choose Miracle to upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/warroom to try Miracle-made sheets today. You'll save over 40%. And when you use promo code WARROOM, you'll get an extra 20% off in addition to that 40% you're going to get off. Plus a free, listen to this, a free three-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no risk. That's trymiracle.com/warroom with the code WARROOM at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. The link is in our show notes. All right, now our listener questions, which we love. The first one, James, Barbara in Humble, Texas, and John in Sonoma, California. We've talked about ICE and others, but what's going to stop groups like the Proud Boys from harassing or intimidating voters near the polls before or after voting? Remember Roger Stone and his gang of thugs in the Florida recount? I would imagine they'll unleash the Proud Boys, James.
I think, but understand, we're all forewarned. That's a big thing. What Michael is doing is telling people, watch out, watch out. In order for this to work the way they'd like for it to work, it has to be a sneak attack. Well, they're not going to sneak up on this one. And right. The Proud Boys, I'm sure that some of these thugs are trying to show up, but what I tell the people that are not Proud Boys, show up in numbers. Don't let fear of these thugs keep you from voting or keep your friends and anybody else. You know, some people may have to, maybe you got to vote in groups. I'm serious. If that's what it takes, then that's what it takes. But they are going to try everything under the sun to stop this election from being fair and the votes counted, I promise you.
The next question is from Sam Tolles in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Sam is a nephew of the great Tom Tolles, the cartoonist for the once great Washington Post. But he asked, with X and Twitter and TikTok now being Trump-friendly, how can we prepare ourselves to win the narrative war post-election if there is a big fight? Well, I think Michael touched on some of it earlier. We have cameras, we have recordings, we have social media. I think the old line conventional media is going to be less important this time, and maybe that's a good thing. And we just have to make sure we're, you know, that the good guys are up to date on social media and the other avenues of communication. Michael, this is for you from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, Will, who says, do you think the recent FBI seizure of those 2020 ballots, which we discussed it, was a dry run or a test run for performing the same thing in the 2026 midterm?
That's the worry. And, you know, there's worries that they'll try it in other states. Again, the states that they keep falsely claiming problems, Wisconsin, other places. I think it's to not just intimidate or do whatever they're doing in Georgia, but also to send a message elsewhere. Yes, I think that we now know that this was done under false pretenses. And so I think that not everything is in the court of law, but this kind of stuff is more in the court of law than most things. And I think that in the future, just as we saw the grand jury saying hell no to the politicized prosecutions of Comey, of Tish James, of these senators, I'm hoping that judges and magistrate judges and the people who are asked to do these search warrants in other places will read what's going on and say, wait a minute, I'm not quite sure I believe this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. James David in Salt Lake City says, what do you think about lowering the voting age to 16? You know, it's in his city, high school students the last two Fridays walked out protesting the offenses against migrant rights.
I don't know. We're going to have voter posts and the voting age is going to be 18. And, you know, the only thing that I'd like to see the Democrats do January 22nd of the year 2029 is just admit Puerto Rico and D.C. estates and increase the size of the Supreme Court to 13. And shit, go on with your life. Okay.
Well, if they do that, I'm going to vote for Bad Bunny to be the senator after that sterling performance in the Super Bowl. Steve in Central Pennsylvania says, if the Democrats take back Congress by a slim margin, what's going to keep the general MAGA citizens from claiming voter fraud and possibly turn to violence? Nothing, Steve. And if that happens, they will be incited, encouraged, egged on by none other than Donald J. Trump. He will not take defeat easily.
But the one thing I'll say is Trump did that when Trump was on the ballot. Trump has not done that on behalf of the other Republicans. And even Republicans or Democrats who lost in 2022 or 2024, none of them claimed, except for Carrie Lake, none of them really seriously claimed, oh, it was all just voter fraud, I really won, keep me in office and that sort of thing. Yes, there's a lot of people primed to believe this nonsense now, but a lot of it does go back to Trump stirring the pot. And he has less ability to stir the pot as a lame duck and not on his own behalf.
Yeah. But he is so threatened by a Democrats taking control of Congress that he might revert to what is his true nature. He doesn't have to revert to it. Does it all the time. Final question. Laurie in Cayuga Falls, Ohio, says she attended a No Kings rally, and she uses the Five Calls app to call the representatives twice a week. And then she says something that we touched on earlier, but really is rather moving. She says, I'm ashamed to say that I'm a bit scared to be a poll worker or a poll watcher, because completely innocent people are being killed or harassed. Laurie says, I should be braver and I really want to help, but I need some advice. Am I being too hesitant? Are there other important acts I can take? I think Laurie speaks for more than a few Americans, Michael.
The eruption of political violence is all around us, and we've certainly seen it, and that is a reason for people to be worried. But this is where police, where law enforcement, who are not political at all, a lot of them are from different political parties, but they understand how important it is to have order and to protect this kind of thing. That's something where I think we can all make a difference. I will say one other thing that people can do as we're having this conversation. Congress, as we mentioned at the beginning, is considering the SAVE Act. And they defeated the SAVE Act in the Senate last year, when there was a very big eruption of public opposition in a way that people were surprised by. People didn't know people would understand it. Videos about married women having their names changed, not being able to vote, went viral. We don't have the megaphone of the Oval Office, but we need to be generating as much noise right now saying Congress should not pass the SAVE Act. Congress should not kick people off the rolls the way this bill would do. This is taking away your right to vote for many Americans. The louder we can get on that, the better chance we have of blocking it in the Senate, and it'll continue to build momentum for these issues.
James, any final quick thought?
Well, I would tell that young girl, that person that has some trepidation about being a poll worker, your trepidation is justified, but it's strength in numbers. And there are always more than one poll worker at a place. I know different people, but there's usually four or five there. I would certainly go. I would talk to my friends, my co-workers, to make ourselves more safe. Maybe when somebody has a son or a neighbor that's a college football player or anything, and ask them to come, sit with you for a couple of 3 hours. But what you're afraid of is not unrealistic. You're not being paranoid. My advice is be cautious. Have what they call the military situation awareness around the polling place. But for God's sakes, don't vacate your post.
Okay, Laurie, get some friends. We need your help. We need everyone involved. Michael Waldman, this has been such a pleasure today. We have learned so much. And as James said earlier, we have to do this on a periodic basis between now and November, because the Brennan Center is just a national treasure, and you have really, really informed us today. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Let my people vote. Let my people vote.
Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Trust and Will, 3-Day Blinds, Delete Me, and Miracle Made, and our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them. When you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.